And so that idea of do it now, okay, especially when you have a chance to make a difference in somebody else's life, don't wait. You know, don't write a note that they're going to read later.
Hello, everybody. This is Chick Stenziano, host of the Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast, here with my co-host, the multi-family mentor, the coach, chef, father, six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barbaro. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, I'm doing great. And I've got to say to everybody, listen up. This is going to be an impactful 45 minutes to an hour. We could probably go 6 hours, but we're going to keep it short. And I want everyone to know that our guest's father really had an amazing impact on my life. You know, all those years ago, driving in the car by myself, I'm going to outdate myself, listening to the CDs, reading the books.
Yeah, the tapes.
He was one of my, I would say one of my first personal mentors. I'd never heard anyone speak like that. I just never did. And the impact that he had on me, being alone in the car, listening to that Southern drawl, looking up to somebody and saying that, boy, this man is just, he lives an amazing life. He's got an amazing marriage. He's got an amazing family. He can have an amazing business doing that too. And he's always, was always talking about money in the way that I loved it, because I wasn't attracted to money, but I was attracted to what money did, right? And, you know, God created the jewels, right? But he didn't create them for the devil. He created them for us. All these sayings that have stuck with me throughout life, and, you know, making money matter is really important to me. And going back, and I'm going to talk about all the mentors after Zig, but he was the first one for me. And I always wanted to learn about sales. And to me, Jake, sales was always an ugly word, always trying to get something over on somebody. But I think Zig did such an amazing job about talking about sales and creating value and looking at it from the other person's perspective. You've got something that you want to sell. You feel passionate about it, and bringing the value to that person really opened up my eyes to what sales truly is. And I just, you know, I can't thank him enough for helping me out on my journey.
Gino, way to start the chainsaw this morning. We are getting it cranked up. So, hey, without further ado, today's guest is Tom Ziegler, CEO of Ziegler Inc. He carries on the Ziegler philosophy. You can have anything in life you want if you will just help enough other people get what they want. So I think the G-Dad is hitting right on that. Tom is the author of Choose to Win, which expands the Ziegler branding and philosophy to include the secret to winning at life is one good choice at a time. So without further ado, Tom, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, great to be here. Thanks for having me on. And you know, people ask me, do you ever get tired of hearing stories about your dad? And I could be 100% honest. I never do, because it's always about life change and it's always about a ripple effect. I mean, you saying you listen to it in your car, I'm sure your kids were there and they're quoting dad and saying, dad, turn that off. But then they listen to it when the car stops, right? Because they want to hear the rest of the story. So I love it. I appreciate it.
Or they pick up on it 20 years later because they knew dad was onto something. So there's definitely that that ripple, trickle-down effect, whatever we want to call it. Tom, just give us a little background of, you know, growing up and transitioning into the company and carrying on the legacy.
Sure. So I went to college and I played college golf, thought I was going to be a professional golfer, like probably a lot of people do. And then you get out and realize how good they are. And started working at the company after college, really supporting my golf habit, worked in the warehouse, shipping and receiving and doing all that, and then into production. So if you have any old cassette tapes, it might have my fingerprints on it, because I was the guy putting the label on a lot of those tapes. Then I moved into sales and just fell in love with it. I was raised probably in that atmosphere to be a salesperson, to be solution oriented, to help people work through that. And then I moved into management and became the CEO about 26 years ago. Behind the scenes guy, you know, I was creating the stage and you know, running the operations behind the scenes so that dad, maybe the greatest speaker who ever took the stage, could go out and do what he did. And then about 10 or 12 years ago, people said, hey, Tom, you should go speak. And I'm like, no. What do you want me out there for? And I'll be honest, it was a big deal, because I think it was me putting pressure on myself, because dad never did. Dad told me and my sisters, hey, whatever you do, I'll support it 100% as long as you do it with complete integrity and complete effort. I mean, that's all dad was. I mean, that's what he wanted for us. And then I realized the pressure was self-imposed, and I thought people wanted me to be like my dad on stage. And nobody in the world can do that. What they wanted was for me to come out the, you know, that saying, the best version of myself, but prepared and on mark, but myself, my own personality. And I've got a wry sense of humor. I'm kind of a nerd. You know, I don't run around the stage like dad did, but that's what's authentic. And then of course, dad passed away about 8 years ago. And so we've been about reinventing the business because that way of going out and changing lives is different now. Mm-hmm. And today we do it by certifying and licensing speakers, trainers, and coaches to use our material. And so that's a ripple, right? That is the legacy. That's what we're about. So there you go. There's the 2 minute and 12 second version of where we are today.
Tom, what was it like having a dad like Zig? See, for myself, my father was very impactful in a different kind of way. What was it like having a personality like that? Somebody who's strong, somebody who actually built an amazing business, came out of poverty. He was one of 12 kids, right? Parents, I mean, what was it like having him as a dad?
So dad was the 10th of 12. And later in life, after he started having a little bit of Alzheimer's, he started sharing things he never shared before. You know, kind of those barriers go down. And he told us that their family was the second poorest family in Yazoo City. Mm-hmm. And this is during the Great Depression, and Yazoo City's in Mississippi. So you got one of the poorest states during the Great Depression. And so, you know, really it was about, for him, it was work ethic and character and integrity. That's where he made his mark. But as people, when they would see him in public, I mean, he was, you know, engaging, charismatic, but he was really an introvert at heart. So at home he was quiet and he always had the notepad and he's taking notes. But because of that, I tell people, as good as he was on stage, he was even better off stage. Everything you saw was magnified and amplified when you met with him one-on-one, because he had this gift of being completely present with whoever he was with. Mm-hmm. And so it was awesome. And when we would be out, let's say we were out eating somewhere and somebody came up to our table wanting to talk to dad, it was different. It wasn't like a celebrity or an athlete getting interrupted for an autograph. It was somebody genuinely wanting to say, hey, I wanted you to know you impacted my life. And those interruptions, they never get old. They don't. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just good. So dad believed in all of us kids. And my time with him was just, I can't imagine a better situation.
Guys, do you mind if I share a couple of quick stories from listening to Zig? The first one was talking about the poverty. And I remember listening to him saying that he would go over his friend's house because they had the maid and the butler and they'd be cooking the biscuits. And he would go over there and invite himself over for lunch. And that's how he knew. And he was talking about how the biscuits get caught in the oven and they don't go to rise. And I remember that story about talking about it. So for me, thinking that someone could rise out of that type of poverty. And I had an opportunity with my parents. They're both immigrants, but seeing that and seeing one of 12 kids and being able to do that, that was my role model. If Zig can do it from that extreme poverty, from having the lack of the resources, then anybody can do it. And the second one, everybody, this is on procrastination. This one really hit me hard. Remember him talking about a person starting out their life and starting to do something. It's September. Oh, well, the kids are going back to school. Let me wait till the kids go back to school, then I'll get started. Oh, it's Thanksgiving. I can't do Thanksgiving. There's college football. I can't get everything done. I'll wait till the holidays. Oh, Christmas comes. Oh, holidays. Can't do anything. Nope. Can't do anything. Let's wait till the springtime. February, March comes. Well, there's a little bit of break. The weather's starting to break. Got to wet my fishing hook. Got to go out fishing hook. Oh, school's over. Weather's out. Got to go to the beach. We're at the summertime. And then all of a sudden it's back to September and I haven't started anything. So I always remember that story. There is always an excuse. It's never the right time to have another child. It's never the right time to start a business. It's only the right time when you're ready. So those two stories really profoundly affected me and saying, when I need to do something, I need to commit to it and stop making excuses about it. So I always think about those two stories and they're just really impactful to me. So I wanted to say thank you about that one also.
Yeah, I love it. You know, one of the things that dad talked about is his first job, he was 6 years old, selling peanuts on the corner. They had to have the money, and everybody in the family worked. And I remember 4 years ago, in fact, 4 years ago this week, I was in Papua New Guinea, which is off Australia, you know, and it's kind of a second slash third world country. They have a big city, but once you get out in the countryside, it's there. And we were, I was there doing some work, and we were at the corner, and they have street kids come up to the cars and sell stuff. And this 10-year-old boy, I'm guessing he was about 10, held up something to the window, and it was peanuts. And I thought to myself, does he know he could be Zig Ziglar?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is like a profound thought. And, you know, when we talk about the change that bind us, it's the mental. The mental is huge. You know, we tend to accept what other people say about us or what we tell ourselves about our condition. We get labeled, we get put into a box. But what Dad taught was, wait a second, you know, why not? If we believe something and then take action on it, and take action is the you know, the procrastination story. Mm-hmm. The second thing I'd follow up with is Dad lived that out. I remember people when he would get done speaking, the line might be 2 or 3 hours long for autographs. And so these people would come in line, and he would spend about a minute with each one of them and, you know, sign their book, talk to them. And often somebody would say, oh, I wish my uncle was here. Or I wish my dad was here, but they're in the hospital. They just had surgery. They're recovering from cancer. You know, would you write something in their book? And Dad would look at them, and he'd look at them, and they'd have a cell phone. He'd say, does that work? And they'd say, yeah. He goes, call them. And so that idea of do it now, okay, especially when you have a chance to make a difference in somebody else's life, don't wait. You know, don't write a note that they're going to read later. Don't send a letter through the mail. Do it right now. And that was just kind of one of his things. If there was something that could be done and should be done, he did it now.
I love that. So everyone write this quote down, because this is Zig 100%. Your attitude, not your aptitude, will determine your altitude. And I love that quote, because I got into life coaching, and it's one of the six stages of energy, and discussing, if you have a great attitude, you have a great demeanor, you have anabolic energy, you're engaged, you love what you're doing, you have a great attitude, you're going to attack that problem. You're going to look for solutions. But if you're always making those excuses and you're procrastinating, you're never going to see the solutions. You're only going to see the problems. And I know Zig was all about responsibility, taking ultimate responsibility. And hopefully, you know, our listeners that are listening to this show, they're responsibility junkies. But for those of them out there that aren't, that's where it ultimately starts out with. So I love that. Can you just give us a couple more? I think a couple more other amazing lessons that your dad taught. I love the attitude. I love the do it now, the responsibility. Anything else that really stood out from your dad?
Yeah, Dad had this quote, and this is my favorite of his quotes. He said, you are what you are and where you are because of what's gone into your mind. And you can change what you are, and you can change where you are by changing what goes into your mind.
Mm-hmm.
So the number one lesson that I learned from Dad is we get the choice to choose our input. What do we watch? What do we listen to? Who do we associate with? And that changes everything. So I took that quote and I changed it, made my own version of it. And so my quote is, what you feed your mind determines your appetite.
Mm.
And so I would just challenge people, what are you hungry for? What if you could, you know, in life, what is it that you want more than anything? Then you've got to go feed your mind that, right? What is it that you really, really want? And when you do that, it changes your thought process. Dad talked so much about hope, and he said, hope is the foundation for all successful change. Mm-hmm. If we don't see hope in the future, then we're not going to do anything about it. And so why is hope so important? I say this, we create the future we see. And that's been the challenge in this political season that we've been through, is that I don't see anybody creating a future I really want, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, it's about what the other party's not doing right, instead of, hey, this is what we can achieve. And in self-development or in business or whatever it is, the first thing you do is you create the future you want, right? You create it in your mind. So what does that do? When you create a future, when you have hope, then that changes your thinking today. And when you change your thinking today, that changes your performance today. And your performance today, to a large degree, determines your future. It's just, it's, I don't know why, but it's hard for people to really, really understand that. But it is so simple. And yet most people don't take advantage of that. Create hope, changes your thinking, that changes your performance, and that changes your future.
That's right. Your thinking changes your actions and your performance. Like you said, you start acting a certain different way. And Jake and I always like to say education coupled with that action will lead to your results. I mean, if you start educating yourself and start taking action from that perspective, and then you start taking those actions, that will lead to your results. I love that. Tom, I want to ask you a couple of questions about speaking. You're certifying speakers. What made your dad a great speaker, and how should people approach speaking? How can they become better speakers?
I'll answer both of those. I think when you're the 10th of 12, you kind of have a built-in audience and you have to learn how to, you kind of have to learn. And then he went into sales, and the first sales that he went into really was door-to-door cookware sales. And he would do dinner parties and he would sell this high dollar stainless steel waterless cookware, and he would do a presentation. So he would cook dinner and he would do the whole cooking show, and it might take a couple hours. And in that process, he gave 2,000 to 3,000 of those. Mm-hmm. So he used to say, hey, I did 3,000 speeches before I ever got paid for one. Well, they were really sales presentations. But here's what happened. As a speaker, when you get out there and you start doing a lot of presentations, you get to the point where you can watch people's body language. Right? You can see how the audience is responding. And so that's the key number one. It's not about you, it's about them.
I love
that. So great speakers understand that it's about the room, it's not about them.
That's the same thing with Zoom, right? You get on Zoom and you're in front of a bunch of people and somebody's picking their nose and the other guy's in his boxer shorts. So it's a little bit different nowadays, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of excited right now about what's going on. There is a sea change in business that's happening. People have figured out that productivity is actually up from those who have started working from home remotely, and their job allows them that, right? Not every job can do that, but the ones that can, their productivity is up. And the bigger organizations are figuring out that the quality of work goes hand in hand with quality of life. And so the big initiatives now are around mental health and well-being. So being a life coach, this is the best market ever for what we do, right? I mean, because so many people are having to sort out their purpose, their why, their priorities, and how that fits into their work. And there's huge opportunity happening with people who before might be, you know, because of lack of education or a disability, or they have young kids, this work at home thing that's happening is opening up the doors in so many ways. But it starts with, what is it that I really want in life? Mm-hmm. And so as a speaker, once we understand that it's not about me, it's about the needs of the people in the room, that's when everything changes. The other gifting that Dad had that I think every speaker should really focus on is to become a master storyteller. I mean, you told me about, you know, the biscuit story and getting cooked in the squat.
Yes.
Right. If he told that same illustration in analytical terms, we wouldn't have been talking about it. Mm-hmm. But in your mind, you could see Dad in the neighbor's kitchen watching the biscuits squat, right? They grow and then they sink down, and these silver dollar like flat biscuits come out. So you never forget the story. That's what great speakers do, is they go in for the room, for the audience, to meet their needs, and then they tell them stories that they'll never forget that they can apply to their life.
I love that. So let me recap that a little bit for everybody. And it's really hard, I guess, in this type of environment with the internet and all, it's not about you. Think of yourself as the guide, Tom, Jake, and Gina, we're the guides out there. The person listening, the audience, they're the heroes. We have to make it easy for them. We have to make it for them. We have to tell them stories, and we're just guiding them down the path. And I think nowadays, a lot of the speakers and a lot of the personalities out there make it about them. So that's a really huge distinction. And I'm glad you said that, because sometimes we struggle to, maybe it's our ego. Maybe we want to feel better. Maybe it makes us feel better, but ultimately it's not serving the community or the heroes out there that we're trying to serve. Would you say that's correct, Tom?
Absolutely. 100%. And I don't, you know, one of the things that I've been able to do from March until now, I think in the first 6 weeks, I did over 100 webinars when the pandemic hit. Some days, 5 or 6 webinars a day. And I still do 5 or 6 webinars a week, maybe more. And what I've learned is that just like in a room, you know, you as a speaker in front of a room, live people, you're looking at body language, you're trying to judge feedback, you're hoping you get applause. Well, on Zoom, it's a little bit different, right? Because they're all muted, and if they laugh, you don't hear them. Mm-hmm. And so what I've done is this, and these are 3 great questions you can ask if you're doing a Zoom or if you're doing a live presentation. Ask these 3 questions. The first one is, how are people feeling before you start? Right? How are they feeling? And you know, if they paid their own money, they might be excited. They might be anticipating a lot. If the boss said you have to show up, they're like, I hope this is good because otherwise it's a waste of time, right? I mean, so you got both ends of the spectrum. Then the second question is, how do you want them to be feeling when they leave? Well, for me, you know what I want? I want a confident referral. I want them to go tell their friends, their coworkers, their whoever they work with, hey, you need to, the next time there's a Ziegler event, you need to go show up because it's a lot of fun. And so the third question is, well, how do you do that on a Zoom? And here's a trick that I've learned. It's not really a trick, but it's very powerful. I have my chat open and I'll ask a question every 60 to 90 seconds and ask them to chat the answer in. And then I call out their names when they answer it.
Mm-hmm. Get them engaged.
It's just about engagement. And it is shocking to me how much people will jump in and start contributing. And then they start these sidebar conversations with each other. And I don't know what the percentage is, but I would bet you the majority of presenters out there, they don't like to chat. They don't like sidebar conversations and those things. And to me, let's make this thing dynamic. Let's get people involved. And if I have an hour's worth of content prepared for a presentation and that golden question comes up, I'd rather shorten my presentation by 10 minutes and handle that question. Mm-hmm. Right. Because it's about the room.
Right.
Right. It's not about what I know. It's about what they need.
Mm-hmm. Well, that means you need to be prepared. And a lot of speakers, maybe they don't prepare as much. You need to be off the cuff and you need to really be engaged. And that's a skill set because you've got a presentation going on. And then all of a sudden, hold on, I've got to stop and ask questions. And that throws me off my rhythm. And it's all, everyone, they want to look cool. And they want, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how you look. It's how you make them feel and what kind of value you're delivering to them. So even if you look vulnerable or you look like you make a mistake, it's not the end of the world. Getting them to chat is, I think, one of the most important things. And we love when we're on stage to do that. We always ask them questions, you know, and I think from the chat box, I think that's a great point, Jake.
Gino, he's got me thinking here. So I like what he's saying, but I think we take it to the next level and we go the Family Feud route. Okay. So when next time we're doing it online, we juice up our production. Okay. And we get like the built-in applause and laughter. Okay. And we have someone sitting by with that. That may add a little bit more dynamic and get the juices flowing for the next online prezo. What do you think?
I like that.
And you know, I've invested a little bit in technology being at home. And so whenever there's something that's profound that's being said, I'll zoom in on them just like this on my
for
camera.
The folks on YouTube.
So I don't know if the podcast listeners will see that, but yeah, I mean, you just have fun, right? And here's the other thing, the piece of that I would give you. When you are giving a live presentation, you are getting back energy from the room, mm-hmm. right? The body language, the nodding of the head, whatever it's going on. When you're on Zoom, if you're not engaged in the chat, and you're not getting any feedback, then you have to work double to keep your energy up because none of it's coming through the audience. Mm-hmm. And so it gives me a competitive advantage when I get engagement, when 25 people answer the question simultaneously so fast that I can't even read it, then I get an energy boost, right? Because there's nothing better for a speaker than knowing, hey, people are dialed in and they're paying attention. And so why do we do the chat? Well, you can have everything in life you want, which is energy, if you help them get what they want, which is life-changing information specifically for them. And the chat, it just elevates that.
Mm-hmm. Love that. Last question, Longshore, before we get to the personal growth. You've created an amazing company. You've created an amazing legacy. Can you just give us a couple tips on how you've been able to scale the business? I mean, and just take something that was started from, the company was Wherever Cookware, doing those 2,000 to 3,000 presentations all the way up to one of the top motivational speakers and speaking companies in the world.
I'll give you two examples that kind of apply to our business. The first one is I was speaking and this idea popped into my head. Somebody said, what's the fastest way to success? And I just said, to replace a bad habit with a good habit. I didn't even know I'd said it. And then the host came up and introduced me after the break and said, hey, did you write down what Tom said? So when he quoted me, I wrote that down. I was like, really? I said that? So out of that simple quote, the fastest way to success is replace a bad habit with a good habit. I started applying that to every area of life. And in personal development, we teach 7 areas: physical, mental, spiritual, family, financial, personal, and career. Those are the 7 areas. So I got back in and I said, you know what? I'm going to do a webinar series on this. And so every week I would do one lesson on the mental, then the next week, one lesson on the spiritual, and then the next week, one lesson on the physical. And I did this, and I've been doing that for 4 years now, every week, kind of going over it. Well, the first year, I was so excited because every time I would teach a class, I got all these questions. Well, by the end of the first year, nobody was asking me questions. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh man, this is a bummer. And then I realized the reason was I had incorporated all their questions into my new presentations. So a business secret is ask your audience to give you feedback and then incorporate what they say into the next version. Mm-hmm. Because you're always then meeting needs. And it doesn't matter what business you're in. I mean, you could be HVAC, you could be life coaching, you could be doing anything. Ask the questions. Then the second thing is that along with that line, last year we came out with our new coaching program, but we did something different based on what people told us. They said, can you do it completely online? Because we've always brought people into Dallas. And so we did. We started teaching it online and it sold out. And then it sold out. And then the pandemic hit. And guess what? It's the only thing we can do. And so we've been blessed in this time, I think mainly because one of our core values is we listen to what people want. And so it's that same thing again. So that's how our business has been able to grow. So we take a good idea. As Seth Godin says, we ship it before it's perfect. And then we get all the feedback we can and we upgrade it and update it as we go.
Commit and then figure it out, Jake.
Gino, we know all about shipping it before it's perfect, don't we, big guy?
Been doing it for the last 5 years and I don't know how it's gotten there, but it's gotten shipped. You know, the box comes a little banged up and stuff, but it's okay.
Life would be boring if we didn't do that.
Uh-huh. All right, guys, let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
Hey all, Dylan McGow here, Senior Business Advisor with the Jake and Gino team. Hope you're enjoying the podcast. I wanted to take a quick second here to share something that I'm extremely proud of and has been crucial in my multifamily investing journey, which is the Jake and Gino mentorship community. When I made the decision to build a multifamily investment business, I knew I needed someone in my corner that could help guide me through the process to get me to my goals quicker and frankly, with a lot less mistakes than trying to figure it out on my own. Which is when I made the decision to join the mentorship community in early 2018. And since then, working with Jake and Gino, as well as strong partners in the community, I've been able to grow my multifamily portfolio to just over 400 units. And last year, Join the Jake and Gino team as a senior business advisor just to help ensure students have everything they need within the community to be successful in the multifamily space. I wanted to take a minute here to invite you to book a time to connect with me. During this complimentary strategy session, we'll take the time to dive into you and your multifamily goals and seeing if working together would be a good fit. One thing I can promise is that whether we work together or not, my personal goal is to provide value and always leave someone in a better position. And I'm confident our team's able to do that with the resources we possess. To get the conversation started, you're going to want to go to jakeandgino.com/apply. Once again, that's jakeandgino.com/apply. Hope to talk with you soon.
All right, we are back. One thing you said earlier, you're talking about your father had a great work ethic, a great moral compass. Where did that come from?
I think it came from his mom. You know, the bottom line is that when he was growing up, they had a garden outside, and you probably remember the hoe of beans, you know, row the hoe of beans story. But everything that he was taught growing up was about, you know what, you're all in, and you're gonna do that work ethic. You're gonna make it happen. So he got into sales. And he started being successful in sales training. And as he was teaching sales technique, right, which is how to close, how to overcome objections, prospecting, all the different things that go into sales, that's what he thought was making him successful. And that's what the leadership of those companies wanted him to focus on. Well, when he dug into it, he realized that wasn't what was ultimately making salespeople successful. It was their mindset, their belief, their attitude, their self-image. And so, you know, Dad said this, that the number one thing that limits our potential is a poor self-image. And so if you look at his career starting in the 80s and really taking off in the 90s, before the 90s, he was pretty much sales and motivation. And then as the 80s and 90s progressed, it was all motivation, but it was all personal development, self-image. Why? I remember at an event, Dad had just gotten done speaking, and this young guy, probably 25, comes up and he says, "I've got enough money to buy one of these two programs. I just became a sales rep for so-and-so." And in one hand, he had Secrets of Closing the Sale. On the other hand, he had How to Stay Motivated, which is our personal development. "Which one should I get?" And I said, "Well, let's ask the master." So I said, "Dad, which one should he get? He just started a sales job this week." And he pointed to How to Stay Motivated. And he said this, he said, "You can put all the right skills on the wrong person and it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But if you're the right person," which is what How to Stay Motivated is about, "then the sales skills that you can learn from us or from anywhere else, that'll take you to the next level, but you got to be the right person first."
So interesting, because I really kind of cut my teeth into business on sales. You know, I got into sales early on, and then it led to a whole bunch of different things. But what I'm hearing from you is that self-confidence in doing the right thing is really the foundation to good sales. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Character and integrity. Yeah. Seth Godin, who I'm a big fan of, he was at our offices a few years back. And I said, "Hey, I see this thing that you're working on." He called it the scalability of trust. I said, "Tell me what that means." And he said, "Well," he said, "in every interaction," it could be a phone call, could be an email, could be a text, could be a speaking engagement, could be face-to-face meeting. He said, "My only goal is to scale trust." And then I thought, wow, that's brilliant. And then I realized that he had listened to Secrets of Closing the Sale at least 1,000 hours worth, mm-hmm. right? Which means he listened to that program over 100 times. Now, in that program, Dad says this. He says there's 5 reasons that people don't buy: no need, no money, no want, no hurry, and no trust. And trust is the biggest of all. So what Seth had done is he had internalized that, and he'd said, "You know what? If I build trust, then I've done the hard part. All I've got to do then is find a solution to their problem, and they'll buy it because the trust is already there." So where does trust come from? trust is the byproduct of integrity. And so as a sales professional or anything, business owner, no matter what you do, school teacher, doesn't matter. If you want to go far, it starts with integrity, because trust is the byproduct of that. You cannot have a good relationship without trust. And in sales, it's the thing that's portable, right? We might leave one sales area and go into another profession and doing sales. Trust is the only thing we can take with us.
So Tom, and there's no limitations, guys, either, because now you have the internet. So you're not stuck to a territory or a town. You have the entire internet, which means you have the entire country or the entire world. So there's no limit in the amount of people that can afford it. You have a huge platform in front of you. So it's even more impactful now than it was, you know, 30, 40 years ago.
Yep. And I'm doing this research for the new book that I'm working on. And if you were a top performer, you have never been in a better position in the history of man. And the reason is you can work for any company from anywhere in the world, because right now everything's shifting. And what organizations are realizing is I need to attract top performers, because it's no longer geographically confined, right? There's a thing called Zoom towns. Have you heard of Zoom towns?
Mm-mm. I think we're in one right now.
Yeah, they're gateway cities, but what's happening is people.
Oh, okay, sorry, you confused me.
A Zoom town. Yeah, you're right. I'm slow. So people are relocating to these towns and cities that are outside of national parks. The real estate's going through the roof, and they're coming from New York and Silicon Valley and Chicago. Because both sides have realized, the individual and the company, that they can work from anywhere. And so what's interesting is Dad said this years ago. He said, if standard of living is your goal, quality of life will almost never go up. But if quality of life is your goal, standard of living almost always goes up. And so there's this sea change going on where large organizations are figuring out that if we can provide quality of life, then the quality of the work is going to increase.
Mm-hmm. That's an excellent point.
And so that's another reason I'm really excited about what's going on, is just this, you know, you can work from anywhere in the world for any company in the world.
Jake, let me repeat those five again. Tom said no need, no want, no hurry, no money, and no trust. Five reasons why people don't sell. They rip it down. It's a simple framework. You're looking at it from that perspective. And I think, like Tom said, the trust factor is the most important thing. Can I trust you? That's a really important thing. So if people can trust you, you're one step ahead of the game.
Yeah. And like I said, the need and the money, you know, kind of go out the window when you have the internet, because you can just reach so many people. So it's you have that trust and solution at the bottom, and then you have this huge blank canvas. It's tremendous. And the thing is, you know, to what you're saying, Tom, Gino and I don't know truly the definition of a Zoom town, and you touched on it a little bit, but in 2011, I moved to Knoxville, Tennessee, for, you know, quality of life reasons. Specifically, Gino moved to Jacksonville, Florida, both from, you know, both of us left New York. And so it's, you know, we're living a proof of what you're talking about, that you can do things from anywhere. And, you know, it's funny, because right at my back door is the Smoky Mountains. So I can look out and I can actually see them right now. So it's definitely a phenomenon that's happening, and it's impacting the country in tremendous ways, whether it's real estate or, you know, where people, migration patterns are going, whatever it may be. It's having a huge impact, though. So very, very good point there. From a personal side of things, what is your best, you touched on habits, what is your best habit for success?
For me, I call it the perfect start. So I get up early. I usually wake up before 5 o'clock in the morning. And my first 3 hours is pretty much, you know, a set of habits that I've created that I do every day. So quiet time, I call it two chairs. I learned from my friend Bob Bodine. One chair for me, one for God. Mm-hmm. I ask God three questions. Hey, do you know what's going on? Are you big enough to handle it? what's the plan, right? And then I listen, right? Because we're so busy. I think I heard a quote from the CEO of Netflix, and he said, they asked him, who's your biggest competitor? Do you know what his answer was?
Himself?
Nope. Sleep.
Ah.
So we live in the age of distraction. And so part of the perfect start is about getting rid of the distraction. Mm-hmm. And so I want to listen first. I read, I listen, I do devotional. I work on my top priorities. I line out my day, and I do this before the world wakes up. And I think, I like this saying, I'm not trying to overgeneralize it, but basically there's two kinds of people out there. There's the kind of people that the world happens to, and then there's the kind of people who happen to the world. And so I think when we organize and plan and create habits in the morning to where we happen to the world instead of it happens to us, then that gives us a huge advantage.
You're leading.
Yeah. So that's probably my number one success habit. The number one lesson I learned from Dad, I already said, it's we choose our input, right? So if I'm going to create this environment in the morning about being productive and getting the things done that matter, then I'm also going to choose the input that is going to allow me to become that person that automatically produces that fruit. There's a saying that I love, a tree's fruitfulness depends on its rootfulness, right? If you want great fruit, you got to nourish the right roots. So what are you nourishing your roots with? And I call them PPAs, purpose producing activities.
Okay.
So what's a good habit? It's a PPA done every day. So a purpose producing activity done every day. So that's what good habits are. And you choose what you're going to do. And look at the top in any industry, athletics, doesn't matter what you're looking at. They're choosing their routine. It's not just happening and being shoved on them.
And for the rest of the folks out there who enjoy landscaping like myself, the product of choice for this fall is going to be Milorganite. That's right. Write that down. True story. All right, Tom, book recommendation.
Oh, my goodness. So there's a couple of books that I love. Rabbi Lappin, Business Secrets of the Bible. Bob Bodine, The Power of Who and Two Chairs. Of course, we can throw mine in there, Choose to Win. Fantastic. Just a summation of a lot of what we've talked about today. And so that's what I'll stick with. There's other books that I'm reading right now that I'm really enjoying. Embracing Oneness by Dr. Tony Evans. It's Oneness Embraced. So I got it backwards. Oneness Embraced. And the other book is that I finished that I loved was Morality by Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. So, and that is if you want an in-depth answer to the question of why we are where we are in our culture, that book sums it up.
Check those out. What project are you excited about right now?
You know, our coaching that we do, we provide support and just learning to support our coaches to make them more productive.
Coach the coaches.
To help them close business, to answer any questions they have, to do different things for them. Because in that, like if that's our focus to, you know, here's a Rabbi Lappin's one of my heroes. I don't know if you've heard of Rabbi Daniel Lappin, but he wrote Thou Shall Prosper and a bunch of books. But he said this, when you solve a problem, you're often rewarded with a certificate of appreciation. We call that money. The more problems you solve, the more certificates you get. Now, here's the tie down from the rabbi that I love. He said, God is never happier with his children than when they're solving the problems of his other children. And so for those of us who are in business, I want you to know that you have a high moral calling. When you solve a problem for someone, the creator of the universe smiles. And that is a powerful position to be in, a feeling to let you know it's okay to struggle. It's okay to persevere. It's okay to go through the stuff so you can solve a problem. When your focus gets taken away from solving the problems of other people, that's when life gets really hard because it gets lonely. We're here to serve others. And so I just love that. And so our core group of coaches is we, instead of like, oh, I hope they don't bring up a problem. What we do is, what problems are you having? Let's figure it out.
It's where the growth comes in.
It is. And it's, I like what you said. That's where the growth comes in, because it really is a growth mindset. And this is it Carolyn or Carolyn Dweck who wrote the book Mindset. This is another sea change that's happening right now in the business world because of the pandemic. Fixed mindset simply means that I am who I am. There's nothing, if it's not easy for me, I'm not supposed to do it. I can never learn it. Therefore, I'm going to gravitate to what's easy for me. And so a lot of businesses built in very effective systems, and they were running and doing pretty good profits and growing. And then everything changed. And so with that fixed mindset approach, only focused on results, what they do is they try to work that system from different angles, but it doesn't work anymore because the market changed. Growth mindset people and organizations, when the change happens, they get excited because now it's their advantage.
The ultimate fixed mindset person that always comes to mind when I read the book, and she mentioned it, was John McEnroe. Even though you have amazing talent, you're always blaming somebody else. It's the wind. It's the ref. It's the noise. It's the tennis ball. It's never yourself. You never take full responsibility. So if you're a parent out there, you need to read that book, because your children aren't smart. You have to tell them, yes, you're smart, but you need to work hard, and hard gets results. I'm teaching my daughter her times tables. She doesn't think she's that smart. Just continue to work, Veronica. Continue to work harder at it, and you'll get it. And all of a sudden, now she gets it. And I'm always challenging her and telling her, the harder you work, the better you're going to get. So they're not put up on a pedestal, right? There's no participation trophies. If you want to be in first place, you need to work hard. We're not going to diminish the results of somebody else just to make you feel better. If you want to get to first place, there's a lot of work that gets involved. If not, it doesn't matter whether you're first, second, or third, as long as you enjoy it and you learn from the experience. I don't care if you get a 75 or a 95. Those 25 questions you got wrong, how can we get those right? And working hard, that is the foundation of being a good parent and a good teacher, by teaching people to have that growth mindset and not to worry about making mistakes. Life is all about making mistakes, learning from those mistakes, and growing and getting out of your comfort zone. So you hit a nerve with that, because that to me is really, people overlook that, but you're so right. I mean, I had the fixed mindset. I had one restaurant for 20 something years. In 6 years, we've accumulated over 1600 apartment units. What changed? I went from a fixed mindset of saying, I need to stay small, I need not to take risk, to all of a sudden, I can do this, and I'm going to learn, and I'm going to make mistakes on the way, and I'm going to lose money, and I'm going to not hire the right people, and I'm going to make mistakes on everywhere else, and I'm not going to look great on camera, and I'm going to sound foolish. But if I don't take that chance and commit and learn it, then I'm never going to grow, and I'm never going to become the better version of myself.
Amen. And I love the book, because dad was teaching this 50 years ago, and now she's got the research and studies to back it up. So
that's awesome.
Putting the numbers down. But I also really appreciate you speaking directly to our audience, because everyone that listens to our show are multifamily investors, and it's hard work. It's very hard work. And everyone on this that's listening, they're problem solvers, and the ones that solve problems in multifamily are the ones that get rewarded and get the certificates. So I appreciate you speaking directly to our folks, because we live it every day. It's not an easy business.
Yeah. And let me just say this. I'm a huge fan of what you guys do in multifamily. When a multifamily investor comes into a neighborhood and buys a number of units, and they raise it up, they raise the standard, the property values go up, the tenants benefit, somebody starts to care about who's living there, who the neighbors are, how can I retain and keep this base going? That changes a lot of lives. One of my very, very best friends does this, and he goes so far as to offer classes to his tenants.
That's great.
Right. To help them, because these are working folk on the edge, trying to get to that next level. And so he's bringing in personal development and goal setting, the things that we teach, because he knows that if he can improve the lives of the people that work there, they're going to stay longer, treat the property better, and attract people like them into that place, mm-hmm. which raises the value. And it's that mindset, that idea that, hey, not only can I win here financially and with an investment, but I can change lives and improve generations to come. And I, you know, there's not many communities that really exhibit that more than multifamily investor communities, because many of them have come out of a situation where they didn't think there was opportunity. And then somebody taught them how, and they're like, if they can, I can. And if I can, those around me can too.
Yeah, you're impacting a lot of people, and these are people's homes. So it's the most dear thing to them. So you got to take a lot of pride in it, or you won't be around long as an operator. So fantastic point. What's the best way for folks to get a hold of you?
There's two ways. Ziegler.com is our website, and all the stuff is there. We have a lot of links, a lot of free gifts. So for people who like free, go get some downloads. And then if you have a question directly to me, just email me, tom@ziegler.com. So I'm kind of one of those weird people who answers their emails. And
you and Gino both.
We're both weirdos then.
All right, Gino, you got this? You're going to take us home here?
Yeah, I learned from the best. That's why I'm a weirdo too. So I love Zig's story. If I could recap it really quick, you know, one of 12 children born, and he moved to Yazoo City, Mississippi, I think when he was a young boy. He lost his parents. And what's amazing about it is that it never held him back. And that quote, your attitude, not your aptitude, will determine your altitude, has just been impactful for me. He never stopped. He always persevered, started working for the Wherever cookware company. And like his son, Tom, said, 3,000 presentations, honing your skills. He wasn't born a master. He became a master through his craft and through practicing. He had an amazing family life. We never mentioned Tom's mom, Jeannie, her name is, the redhead. He always called her the redhead. And me awesome. Sitting in the car, you know, 15, 20 years ago, driving by myself in the car. I mean, not knowing. Not knowing if I was good enough to go into business, and just listening to him every day, listening to the stories, it was really powerful for me. Having like a second dad, just knowing that, it really made an impact on my life. And he gave me the confidence that if he can do it, I can do it. And unfortunately, I met Jake, and the rest is history. And I'm just honored and humbled to have his son on the show and how he changed my life. That's all.
Ton of gratitude there. 100% Gino and Tom, thank you so much for, you know, sharing, you know, your stories and your wisdom today. We truly do appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much. That was beautiful, Gino. And if Dad were here, he would say, first you would touch his heart. He would be so overwhelmed. I know he's hearing it, by the way. And secondly, he'd say, and I'm so glad you took action, because you're the one responsible for that, not him. That's what he would tell you.
That's awesome.
I appreciate it, Tom. Thanks for being on. Thank you.
Thank you
guys.